sahana bhavatu, sahana punaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. This is we have gathered together. Okay. Pratipaksha bhavana. Sometimes I feel that thinking the opposite thought, thinking positively, just feels like pretending and doesn't change the feeling inside. I then feel that something deeper is needed, like inner child work. Can you explain more about Pratipaksha Bhavana? Yeah. One thing is that it's not hypocritical to act and behave off of your values as opposed to your feelings. Because the feelings actually have a lot of unconscious material and they don't represent your value system. So even though you may have some negative feeling, you feel like it's more real of me just to express that negative feeling. And I would say, no, it isn't actually. It's more real for you to work on the negative feeling and express something that's true to your values. So I think that's really worth thinking about, because otherwise, you feel like you're going against yourself when you're following your values, but actually it's the other way around. Mm-hmm. And you can work on your feelings or your negativity. We have so many different ways of doing that, from inner child work to having, you know, sitting in imaginally, sitting facing each other, and one tells everything to the one, and then the other tells everything, and you know, the inner children tell everything, and then you get to objectify, and even sometimes you think about all the cause and effect things that came into creating this problem that you have between each other as kind of a product, and then you can offer the whole thing to Ishvara. There's a lot of different work we can do. Like another is just sitting, invoking the presence of that person, the form of that person, and it'll bring all of this baggage with it. You know, and then you just sit with that until, and relax, and just let it all slowly dissipate off of the image. You know, so there's just so many ways that we work on these negative feelings, because it's not how we want to be. And so your value system is much more real to you than these feelings or emotional reactions and things. Those are things for us to work on, and they don't need to be shared. Sometimes they do, but it's, even if you need to share, say you're a couple or a friend, good friends or whatever, and you have to, you don't want to be hiding things. But on the other hand, you also don't want to spew, you know, anger and rage and that type of thing. So it seems like you can work on your feelings, and then you and your partner can talk about it kind of together, you know, and make a plan how to work with this without having to spew, as that's what I like to call it, the volcanic spew. Mm-hmm. That's very hard to handle, actually, when somebody does that. So that, keeping that in mind, I think the Pratipaksha Bhavana is such an ancient tradition. It's really stood the test of time from Swamiji, I think Swamiji has said. But it means you may have like a negative or hateful or reaction towards somebody, and so you behave in the opposite way. Say something nice. Doesn't have to be a big deal. Just something to counteract that kind of a negative thing that has a hold on you. You can actually do something else. Or if you can't get yourself to physically do something else, act or say something that is more kind of positive, or Swamiji will say every day you put a flower on that. Like putting a flower on your teacher's desk. We just gave you an F or something. Or when you're, you know, when you have to pay your rent and you've got a really cranky landlord. This is an example that he uses. You take the landlord or the boss or whoever it is and put a flower on his desk every day. And things start to change. Every little thing you do kind of changes, disrupts the system that's already in place. And so that these are just ways to work on yourself. Even internally you can do this pratipaksha bhavana. You can't stand somebody, then you start thinking about the things that you like, the things that are positive. Just kind of break these ruts in your brain, you know, because you don't have a value. That these aren't our values. It's not how we want to be. So that means we have to work on, use the tools that we have at our disposal to work on transforming these things. It's not always easy, but that's what Swamiji said also. It's not easy. I worked really hard. Because some of the things are painful, you know, and say you have a person in your life that really triggers some deep negative situations you've had in you when you were little, and just goes right for somehow you just zero in right on that, right on target. To that very hurt place. And maybe that person, the way that person is, that's kind of a very, kind of a hostile person, or a person that is attacking in some way. And so then when you try to do that work to try to transform all of that, sometimes that's very difficult. But what you have to do, is everybody with me, or am I shortcutting too much? Okay, so what you have to do is go in and really be with that hurt. And then you say something like this. This is my hurt. This person is not really the cause of it. Because when it's really bad, the projection of the hurt onto that person is really strong. You know? And so it's hard for you to even believe that person is not the cause of the hurt. Because the hurt is a lot, and that person also can be a really, really mean person, or however you can say it, really mean, really cruel type of person. And they hurt you. That's what you think. They've really hurt me. I don't want them in my life. They really hurt me. I don't want to have to put up with this. But if you go in, and that's how it seems, because the person's a very difficult person. There are difficult people in the world, you know. And they're difficult for themselves also. They're not just difficult for you. They're difficult for others. They're very difficult for themselves. They themselves have been raised in a lot of trauma and a lot of pain. And so it's hard. There are some people that they can't really keep anybody around them because they're so hard to be around. They're so mean. So say one of these person like this comes into your life, and for whatever reason, however the karma is, what they, their anger and the way they are just goes right into maybe your most sensitive hurt. So you feel very hurt and you think it's impossible to be around that person. So this is one of the, I don't know if you've ever had these kind of experiences, but everybody, I think, has one or two in their life. That's something that's really tough. And so say in that extreme situation, you have to go in. You have to try this anyway. I'll just tell you that I know that it works because I've done it. You go in to that and be with that hurt, and then you have to say, you have to zero in on the place where you're really hurt, and then you have to say, this is my hurt. This person is not giving me this hurt. This is my hurt. And then somehow you recognize the truth of it. It's not to say that person's not difficult and a real problem. They can be, really. But there's a lot of difficult people, and they don't bother you at all, you know. This person somehow is a real trigger to that particular hurt. But that hurt is already there. That's the thing to understand. And sometimes it's difficult to really see that. It's not like they're sticking that hurt in you. You know, they're a difficult person, but they're triggering. They have a way of getting to these weak points in your psyche. There's a certain type of personality disorder called borderline personality disorder. For psychologists, they know. You also may have heard of this also. They have, and this will be in the books, and we talk about it when we're in case conference and that type of thing. They have an uncanny sense, like a sixth sense, to just zero in on your most vulnerable point. And all therapists that are working with somebody with this type of a structure, personality structure, that's difficult for them also, they all know that they will, it's almost like, you know, how a dog can follow a scent and get there, no problem. These kind of people can just go right to your most sensitive spots. But the thing to understand is those spots are already there. It's not very nice that this person goes to them and, you know, pokes at them, but they're already there. You know, and so getting rid of that person is only good for the time being, because then the next one will come and go and touch that spot. And so if you can say that to yourself and then recognize the truth of it, it's really quite shocking. And then you have to sit with that and try to, you know, talk to it and be with it and understand. And then you can start healing. But you don't heal those hurts by kicking out the one who's, you know, the trigger. So, anyway. How did I get into that? Pratipaksha Bhavana is really, really ancient, and it's also a type of cognitive psychology where you change the way that you're behaving in, like, some dyad or in a group situation. You change your behavior and it changes everybody's behavior. You want other people to change, but all you have to do is add something new. Like, we have this one in systems theory, which is like family psychology. There's this one very simple kind of systems theory, family psychology, and it's just basically this. Try something different. Do something different, you know, in terms of the relationship or in terms of the family structure. Try something new. Because that changes everything. If you do something different, then everybody else has to do something different also. The simple things. But
maybe like get a dog or something. Into the house.
That would be great. Get a puppy. That would change everything, of course.
Radha, can I ask if there's a person who we really dislike in a really strong way, and say we chose to bring them a flower to their desk every day, but it was so hard, you know, if we kept doing that without any other work, is it possible to not change? Like, say you, oh, I don't like you, but I bring you the flower. Oh, I don't like you, but I bring you the flower. Would the mind eventually soften? Or do you sort of need to also do some inner work if there's really a lot of negativity?
Well, I wouldn't bother to say that I don't like you, but here's the flower.
No, if the mind does it anyway.
Well,
you know, if there's so much resistance.
But I think when there's a lot of resistance, if you do that, it does change the mind.
It will.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. But you can do other things too. You can also do inner work and all of that. But, and that would be positive too. That would be great. But I think, yeah, it does change. It does change you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. From my experience and the experience of my guru bhais and people. when we talk to each other about these things.
But then for the other person who gets the flower, maybe also sense the confusion of the feeling is one way and the action is one way.
Well, if they asked you, maybe you could say, you know, I don't like you, but I want to.
But if they don't say that?
I don't know. I think it changes the other person, too. It's just, it's bringing something new into the situation. It shakes things up a little bit. We don't have to use a flower. That's just a stock example, you know. But it's going to, like I told you about that one person I had so much trouble with, and I just walked by and said, hi, how are you? And I think that both of us really changed by that. I had to do it a few times. And it's not that we became friends, but this knot was not there anymore. You know, that aversion. And it's kind of shocking how that changes. Yeah. Just a little thing. You're just disrupting the system a little bit. Doing something positive. Pratipaksha means the opposite. So, you know, an opposite, you know, doesn't have to be the exact opposite, but, you know, it neutralizes. It's like a seesaw. It's the other side of the seesaw.
But what comes up in me is, like, healthy borders. Where do they come in? I mean, for me, it just, like, wakes a lot of feeling of, like, now everything is okay, and it's all up to me to take care of my wounds and my weak spots and all that. But when is it actually not okay? Like,
Well, it's often not okay what a person does, but you have to learn, I think we all have to learn how to deal with it objectively, you know, and not come out of the, like we deal, learn how to be with ourselves and heal our hurts. And then if somebody is out of line, then you have to be able to deal with them. But maybe you don't have to deal with them out of your raw hurt. It's not about not dealing with them, but say if you're dealing with them objectively, you don't have that emotional overload that takes away all your objectivity and kind of your being able to help or deal with the person in a way that's helpful. You know, sometimes we can't, but we're growing. You know, you have to just try these different things and keep your heart keeps getting bigger and you become more objective and you're able to have boundaries have very excellent boundaries without hurting people. Swamiji he's the master of that. He sets boundaries so easy and naturally, but you don't even know that he's doing it. You don't feel rebuffed or pushed away or not wanted or anything. You know, he's just very matter of fact about it, and there's no anger or anything in him. So we need to learn that, and it takes time and practice. And that having the value, it's kind of a value for the values type of thing to make that worth it for us. Because in the end it's all worth it for us, because our mind is not suffering from our behavior. Because even if the person's a real pain, if you treat them unkindly, you get to directly experience the unkindness in yourself, you know. Whatever painful thing you do to another person, you experience it as much as they do. So you can't escape. Even if they really deserve it. And Bhagavan doesn't see it that way. You know, you get what you give. And we keep assimilating our experience like that, you know. And keep adjusting and adjusting, and it takes time. So you have to be patient. It takes time to have your mind mature to that level of bigness where things don't throw you at all. The best person I've ever seen is Prithad Swamiji. It's an extraordinary bigness. It's like, so the example of, it's kind of like, it's not the right example, but anyway, it's kind of a nice little story. You you know, in some of these comic books and things, there's the king of the jungle who is the lion, right? And so the lion, a great big lion, is taking a nap and just enjoying himself taking a nap. And a little mouse crawls up on top of him, you know, and kind of snuggles into his fur. And the lion just kind of goes like this and then realizes it's a little mouse up there. And he doesn't do anything at all. It just lets him sleep there. No problem. That's why he's the king of the jungle, because he's big. He's so big. Nothing scares him, or he can accommodate all the little mice and all the little creatures. From his standpoint, it's nothing, you know. Swamiji uses that example as a Mahatma. It's just not a problem. You know. They want to snuggle into your the hair on your back, then, like a little mouse. It's a non-issue because of your own bigness. So, but we have to become that big slowly but surely, and it's a lot of work. And you don't have to either. You can have knowledge and be cranky. Cranky Jnani. Like that. Pranavananda. Here, water on your head. Put a bucket on that guy's head. Bucket of water. You don't sleep in class. You don't meditate. But I think he was meditating.
Do you have some picture of him? Or?
Yeah, I don't have, but no. There we have, yeah. We have it at Coimbatore, and I think probably, I'm sure it's also there in Rishikesh.
Yeah, I've seen it in Rishikesh.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm also not only thinking about people, I also think about sometimes it's the situation where, you know, you feel maybe, cranky or irritated or something. When it's sometimes I can experience that it's, if I share it with someone, it feels like a relief. But it can also be like putting gasoline on the fire, you know? It's like when you start to talking about, for example, here, it's maybe the topic is like, I'm cold, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'm just focusing on that, and it becomes worse.
Yeah.
And it's hard sometimes, oh, should I just say to myself that it's, you know, it's okay, I can recover. You know, it's like this, it's hard to see when do I need to share or not, you know? Do you know what I mean? Because there's a time when it becomes like complaining and I'm just making it worse for myself and everybody else.
Yeah, and then you realize that and you stop. Really. Yeah. You know, the word that Swamiji used, I think it's a great word, he was so good at discovering words, is pressure. It's like if something's bothering you or somebody's hurt your feelings or something, there's a pressure that's there inside and it wants, you need to kind of talk to somebody or tell somebody because of the pressure inside. And so often we will, but then sometimes in the end you wish that you hadn't. Because then that, say if it was about somebody or some gossipy thing, but somebody really hurt you and you just need to tell somebody, so you tell your friend and all that. That's what we normally do. But sometimes just, and I totally understand that. I understand it for myself too, though I try not to do that, because there's a real reward in not doing that, in being able to hold the pressure. So I would just suggest, just from my own sadhana and being with myself, working on those kind of things, even though you can't do it all the time, you should practice it sometimes to realize the difference between holding something that wants to spew, you know, to hold it until it passes and see how you feel once you've done that. And then you're objective again. Just the ability to do that. Because it can become the other way, because the pressure, you don't want to contain that pressure. That pressure wants to release. It's kind of like a pressure cooker, you know, when it gets to a certain point, that pressure valve goes off, and the pressure is released, and then the pressure cooker can be happy with the amount of pressure that it's holding. And so you can get to that point where you want that relief, but then you don't feel good afterwards. You feel better if you're able to contain it. So these are just experiments. They're experiments to see what really brings you the most strength and the most shanti. And I wouldn't take it as I have to do this or I have to do that. But you have to be willing to kind of experiment and not be afraid to try different things. Mounam is really good for that, because if you mounam for a day or a few days, now that pressure, something could have happened, but you're mounam. And so the pressure is there, but because you're mounam, if you're honoring that mounam, you can't really say anything. And so then you get to experience what that is like to not just kind of react, but to be able to hold it. And it's also, mounam is a wonderful thing because your mind actually becomes stronger by being mounam. Maybe you do it every week or something. Your mind becomes stronger because you're put in a position to push against the borders that you've set up for yourself, because you're not going to talk, so it can't come out. And then you have to deal with it yourself. So you kind of it changes the way that you are with the world. And it makes you stronger. It gives you more space to think before you act, you know. And then you can just be yourself, but you have that choice. That's what I'm saying. You have a choice, because you have the strength to not have to release the pressure all the time. You won't have the option, that's what I'm saying. If you don't have the option, then that's kind of treacherous.
There are people like Swamiji that can accommodate everyone in every situation. Being there, like just to serve and help. The general situation is instead within our level of knowledge and within our personality, we have our own limits and boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so beyond Pratipaksabhavana, can you elaborate a little bit both cognitive and behavioral tools, or just ways to drop our resistances? You know, we keep on learning and gaining some self-knowledge, but every one of us in 10, 15, 20 years will be a person more in peace with herself, and probably even more pleasant to be around with. And at the same time, we, each of us, or at least myself, we'll all have our own limits.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very interested to know at a general level what you think, like when you see, okay, these are my limits, but still I want to do a little bit more, I want my heart to grow a little bit bigger. How, in your experience, how do we help ourselves to drop our left resistances?
Well, I think we have to drop them and work on them as they come up, and as you become aware of them, you know. And so that's kind of takes care of it. You don't have to go searching inside yourself for things. Just the things that come up that, or you're not able to hold the pressure. If you can hold the pressure, you know, until the situation, that pressure's not inside, then you can talk to the person or do whatever you want. But if you can learn how to hold the pressure so that you don't just spew out, then you can actually do some inner work. You can do inner child work. You can really contemplate on that person. You can say, what am I really afraid of? You can do some work before you come into relationship with that person, you know, instead of gossiping, gossiping or bad vibing or all of the awful things that we do to each other, you know, that you don't want to do, you know, that doing to others, you think we do not want these things done to us. We don't want people gossiping about us or disliking us or bad vibing us. It's all very painful. So we don't want that. And if we do, of course we don't want it. But then all, what can we do ourselves then not to give that? And so part of it is at Mountain, giving your, having a little space before you actually act out. Just that space, you know, that holds the pressure. And then you do some inner work before you can, it's not about not coming into relationship with that person or that situation. You do want to do that. But if you can contain, keep to yourself, you know, contain it for a while so you can do some inner work and your mind gets used to not spewing, not having the pressure, that pressure release valve. People have a lot of emotional difficulty, like there's some people who, for whatever reason, they have terrible tempers. And so when the pressure comes, it comes up really strongly, and then that person will just be like a volcano with all the lava, you know, running over everybody, you know. Everybody ends up, sometimes we say everybody ends up in a puddle on the floor, and then they've spewed all over the place, and so they feel great. But everybody else is devastated. They're just, and then the person who's got rid of all of their lava wonders what's wrong with all, with you. I don't know if you've had that experience. I grew up with it. You know, what's wrong? What? And the, nobody can even, you said everybody's just decimated. But the person who's blown the fuse feels good because the pressure's been released. And then they don't even remember, really. So, so, you know, it's so much better to learn to gain the strength to hold these things in that are actually cruel. Gossip is really, it's really cruel. But it's because of pressure. People like to gossip because they can get rid of the pressure and have somebody receive it, and it makes it better, you know. And but that gossip is a, I'm, why we bring it up is because always when you're in a community, when you're in a sangha, say if you're at the ashram for 3 years, then there's all kinds of pressure that happens because you're all living together 24/7. You know, 3 months is a long time, but imagine 3 years. That's pretty challenging, you know, 24/7 with a whole group, and you're living together in all different types of things, and all of you have, all of us have stuff inside. You know, so things get triggered. So it's like a being in a pressure cooker and in a cauldron, and you do, it's in a way, I mean, it's amazing how much you go through in those 3 years. It's a very condensed, you know, growing spell. Very condensed, but you become a lot, you have to become strong. You know, and that strength gives you a lot of shanti and a lot of objectivity because you don't have that pressure to need to release your hurt and your pain. You can be with it and then do inner work, and you don't have that, you get over that need. It changes things in a really positive way. But it's work to do that because you want to do the opposite. Yeah. The pressure valve. Does that make sense? Yeah. Depending on where you started, you know, when you came to this knowledge, and even, you know, we'll call it once you came to this knowledge, everybody's comes to this knowledge with a different amount of psychic material that they have to work through. You know, some people could have done a lot in their last life and then pick up the thread early in this life, but a lot of this work has been done. You know, Krishna talks about that in the Bhagavad Gita, because Arjuna was worried about it. What will happen now that you're giving me this knowledge, and you know, I'm not going to probably be able to remember it all in the battlefield. He's just ready to go to war. I'm not going to be able to remember all of that. What's going to happen to me if I get killed in the battlefield? Because I haven't had enough time to really be with this. Because by the time Krishna finished teaching, Arjuna was quite clear. But he also was clear enough to know that he probably can't hold it, you know. So what will happen to me when I die, if I get killed? And so Krishna said, there's no such thing in this as what we call an ubhaya prashna, where now you're neither enlightened, you know, you neither really have nishta, jnana nishta, nor are you a samsari. So you can't go back into this life, and you're not finished on this end either, so you're just left hanging, dangling in the middle. He said, no, that's not how it is. You'll take a birth, your next birth, depending upon your karma. You'll either be born into a family of jnanis, you know, or you'll exhaust some karma and then meet your teacher and pick up exactly where you left off. You can't go back. Once you're a mumukshu, you can't not be a mumukshu again. You can try, but it won't work because it's too late. You've already recognized the problem. You cannot go back. And so that also, if you think about it like that, your next birth, say like one of our students, Marjorie, she's in her 80s, and she's an amazing person, but she knows she's older, you know, so she came to this knowledge older, and she would say like to me, I wish I would have got this knowledge when, you know, when I was your age. That would have been so wonderful. And I said, well, you know, I probably got this knowledge last life when I was your age, but I hadn't finished, I hadn't done all the work that needs to be done. So now I picked up the thread when I was in my 20s, and now I have to do all that work, you know. So you'll get that knowledge now, and if you don't have time to really get that clarity and that depth and strength, then you'll just pick it up when you and get it at next life, you'll get it at a young age. And you have to spend your whole life doing that, and doing whatever work you have to do to take care of the issues, you know, that cause the head of the jiva to rise, you know, because of our hurts and raga dveshas and things. It takes time. But it's the thing is, it's so meaningful having that Ishwar Arpana Buddhi, Prasada Buddhi, you know, working on this, the little smallnesses that we have. It's all meaningful because it's all, you know, it's all like a big pranam to moksha. So it's a worthwhile thing to do. It's all purposeful, you know. And also you recognize yourself as maturing. And the more mature you are, the more shanti you have. The more shanti you have, the more of your presence is dominating the mind. You know, much more dominant because of the shanti in the mind.
How do you... In the best way, how do you take care of feeling of guilt for things you've done before? You have the values, like, let's say, gossiping. I've been in many, many workplaces where it's been kind of a habit to gossip or to complain and to really negative vibes. And I can feel so bad about that now. Like, things that you've done before, you got the values of not doing it. Like, how to take care of that? It's still in you, you know.
Well, if it's just like gossiping and it's just a thing of the past and there's no harm done, you know, you just try and never do it again, that's all. Sometimes when we've really hurt somebody, you know, or you have things that you regret. I've got 3 or 4 things in my life that I really regret. I feel guilty. I feel just really badly. And I didn't think much about that, except I realized it was never going away, that I just feel badly, and I'm not going to not feel badly about it or guilty about it, or wish I would have handled it differently. And so that was just, I didn't really think about it, I was just realizing that it didn't go away. And then once Swamiji said, you know, if you, that guilt, it never goes away. And that made me feel better. Because, okay, I won't try to make it go away then. The fact is that there's three or four things that, you know, I just wish, I wish I would have been better. I wish I really do. I really wish I would have been better. I wish I would have handled it differently. And how am I ever going to feel differently about that? It doesn't mean that I beat myself up over it. I don't beat myself up over it. But I do wish it would have, I wish I would have been different in those situations. And so that's a type, I don't know if you want to, it's a type of guilt. I can't say that I feel guilty, but I wish I hadn't done that. So, and when Swamiji said that, I realized that I kind of looked inside of myself to see these things again and realize, yeah, how is that going to go away? I wish I hadn't done that. I'm never going to wish I had done that. I can say, well, you know, you did that and you were immature and confused and you made some mistakes and that's what it is. So we have to live with that. And not, you don't have to blame yourself for anything, but you still feel badly. And you don't have to take a whip yourself or something. But that won't help. It's not going to take away feeling badly about it. So, and maybe for other people it wouldn't even be that big of a deal, but for you it is. So I think it can rest lightly if you just accept it. Yeah, you feel badly about it and you always will. So that's what it is. Accept that. Yeah. He shook his head and he said, guilt never goes away. Something like that shocked me so much. But it was a relief for me. But you know that there's a some smell, like it smells like a, like bleach or something.
Oh yeah, you're right.
I'm really having a problem with it. What do you think that could be? It really smells like bleach.
Is it from the flower? That flower actually has a very strong smell from the leaves.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Did someone clean the floor today?
No, it's not this. It does have a small bit. No, somebody. Do you think somebody cleaned the floor with bleach or something? Anyway, it's okay. But just curious. Cause, but you can smell it. Sorry, but it's making me cough. I'll do one. One?
Yeah.
Okay, it'd be beautiful.
Shiva Namah Shivaya. Arunachala Shiva Namah Shivaya. Arunachala Shiva Namah Shivaya. Arunachala Shiva Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Namah Shivaya. Shivaya Namah Om. 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 Namah Shivaya. Shiva Namah Shivaya. Arunachala Shiva Namah Shivaya. Arunachala Shiva Namah Shivaya. Arunachala Shiva Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Hari Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Namah Shivaya. Om 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 Namah Shivaya. Shankara Namah Shivaya.
Swasti praja bhav paripalayantam nyayena margena mahin mahishah ko brahmane bhyashuvamastu nityam loka samasta sukino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini Desho yam chobharahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarvesham swastir bhavatu Sarvesham shantir bhavatu
Sarvesham Purnam Bhavatu. Sarvesham Mangalam Bhavatu. Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha. Sarve Santu Niramayaha. Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu. Ma Kaschit Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Asato Ma Satgamaya. Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya. Mrityorma Amritangamaya. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.